October 28, 1979, talking to Chuck Dart in Manly Hot Springs. Well, maybe we'll start with you mentioned 1950 was the first time you came to Manly Hot Springs, right?
Yes, we came down for the 4th of July weekend. We chartered, or we had friends that rented an airplane, more specifically, and they brought us down here, and then they picked us up 3 days later, and we had a very pleasant weekend. We met some interesting people here and really liked the place very much. And then 5 years later, when taking a friend to the hospital in Fairbanks and for surgery, brought her there in the morning. And while she was being entered, I left the room and there was an old man going down the hall in a wheelchair to the TV set at the end of the hall. And I wheeled him down there. And it turned out that he was Pat Hart from Manly Hot Springs. And in the small talk, I mentioned that we had been there and really liked the place and would like to own it. Why I blurted that out, I don't know. But anyway, he said the place was for sale. And he told me that Bob Byers had bought it and wanted to sell it, and I called up Bob Byers as soon as I left the hospital and made a luncheon date with him for that day. And I called Gladys and she said, go ahead. And Bob and I had lunch and worked out a deal, and that was it.
When you were going to go talk to him, did you feel confident you were going to buy the hot springs?
I really wanted to very much. Yeah, I was hoping to. I had never met buyers, and I didn't really know what kind of a situation I could swing with him, but as it worked out, it was very easy. Mm-hmm. He seemed like a really nice guy, which he was and is. He's still flying and lives in the Seattle area, flies out of there. At the time, he owned the mail certificate between Fairbanks, Minto, Manly Hot Springs, Tanana, and Rampart. And he billed his airline as the biggest little airline, and which he sold a year or two later, about a year later, I think it was, or maybe it was during the same year, now that I'm thinking, he sold the certificate to Ween and Frank Jones, one of his pilots, got a 170 that Byers owned, and moved down here. He got the property that's called the Sabin Homestead, which is the homestead in which the present airstrip is located. It includes the building that the home that's right across the street from the store, and the present store building was not there at the time, but there were several other sheds back there, and also a shop. Shop burned after Cy Hetherington bought the place. Frank wasn't here all that long. two or three years. And then he leased to Mark Stella. And then he took it back from Mark Stella after two or three years. And then he made a swap with Cy Hetherington for the Sabin Homestead for Cy's place in Fairbanks. I don't know if there was any money involved in the deal or not. But I know that there was the exchange of properties. And that's how Cy happened to get the property.
Well, at the time that you bought this hot springs from Byers, had there been a law passed yet, a federal law about people buying hot springs, buying or selling or owning?
Yeah, right. There was an executive order, I believe, from 1912 that withdrew medicinal springs from public entry. And then I think it was about 1918 or 1920 that Congress passed an act that made it more specific and withdrew hot springs. There was some dispute over whether or not some hot springs were medicinal, and that was one of the arguments that was used to secure the patent here, was that these were not medicinal springs because of the low mineral content in the water. Although on the letterhead of Frank Manley's hotel, the waters supposedly would cure liver ailments and other things.
what year was that letterhead, or what years did he have that letterhead?
Well, presumably it would have had to have been before 1913, because that's when the hotel burned, and the hotel was closed sometime before that. I really don't know when the hotel closed, but probably 1911 or 12, or possibly even before. It wasn't in operation all that long.
Is that hotel over where the watercress patch is?
Yes. Yeah.
So he owned the hot springs for quite some time?
No, he never did own the hot springs, but he had a working agreement with Karshner, which also was in violation of the terms of the Homestead Act. And that was a problem in getting patent to the homestead, or I should say one of the problems. But as you know, the patent was ultimately issued anyway, but it was issued to the widow of Karshner, Cordelia, who was his second wife.
Well, would you be willing to talk about what kinds of price you're talking about paying for hot springs then? I don't know if that's something you'd rather not do.
Yeah. I know that it was sold for $5,000 at a Marshall sale to satisfy some debts. And just whose debts these were, why they were incurred, I don't know. But there was a banker in Fairbanks named Harry St. George that bought the property for $5,000.
When was that?
It must have been either in the early 20s or maybe in the late teens. Cause
was that 270 acres or the
right homestead? Right, the original homestead. And then he sold a half interest to a man named Charles M. Browning, who was called Tex Browning, presumably because he came from Texas, I would guess. but I don't know. Anyway, he was the commissioner here for many years, and in 1929, the widow of Harry St. George sold the other 50% interest to Browning. So Browning had 100% interest in it. And then it must have been about 1952 that Browning sold to Bob Byers. And we bought the place in 55.
So, did Bob Byers, you know, was there any particular reason he didn't want to keep the hot springs? It seems like something a person would want to hang on to.
Well, he told me that when he bought it with the idea that if the day came when he couldn't fly anymore, that he would operate the hot springs as a farm. But I really don't know why he chose to sell the hot springs and his airline.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you and Gladys plan to do with the hot springs when you bought it? What kind of ideas did you have?
Mostly greenhouse ideas, right? We didn't have much of an idea about making it into a resort at the time, which, as you know, we haven't done.
Did you know you'd be, or did you want to be growing tomatoes at that time that you had in mind?
Yeah, right. Before we built this place, before we bought this place, I'd built a small greenhouse in the college area using polyethylene. That was the summer of 1955.
So did you move right here after buying the hot
springs? No. Gladys taught school in the college area that the fall of 55, 56, and I did come down here and went back and forth a number of times that year, and I started plants in that old cabin at the bottom of the hill in February and March, which was way too early, and it was too dark in there too. That was also the year that I served on the grand jury in Fairbanks. And did I tell you about being involved in a murder?
But we never did tape it. That's kind of a big event in a person's life, being on the grand jury. What was that like?
Well, there were, this was during territorial days, and it was a federal grand jury, and they had a wide range of jurisdiction, so that the types of cases covered everything from embezzlement and prostitution, murder, narcotics, robbery, illegal entry into the United States,
and so what was your case?
Oh, there was, I don't know if you want to write this up, but it was there. I gave a ride. It was, as a matter of fact, it was Halloween afternoon, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that driving out towards college where we were living at the time, there was a fellow walking alongside the road, and I stopped and gave him a ride to his place in La Mesa. And the next day, I saw his picture on the front page of the Newsminer as being the murderer of a woman storekeeper that had a shop there in Sladeville. It's no longer there now. She had a little grocery store. And he had beaten her to death with a tire iron. And a neighbor woman had seen him leaving the store. And when it was learned that the shopkeeper had been murdered, the neighbor lady told the police, gave a description of the man, and he had stopped at the Golden Valley office to pay his utility bill, and he paid it in small coins. And he attracted the attention of another patron in there with this. And the patron happened to hear the description of the man on the radio. And he contacted the police. The police got a hold of the Golden Valley manager, who opened up the office and checked the records. And the police had the man by midnight, and was in jail and charged. And because of the high feeling up against the man for the crime, the defense was instrumental in getting a change of venue, and so the trial took place in Juneau. And I had a week in Juneau at federal expense.
So what did you think of the judicial system from that viewpoint, from the experience you had there?
Well, I thought it was okay. The limited experience that I had with that particular trial was just my own testimony, because I was excluded from the courtroom at other times. All of the witnesses were excluded except during the time of their own testimony. But as far as the grand jury procedure was concerned, I was impressed with it, but that's only an early step in the justice system. And I think that the grand jury system is a good one. There are some weaknesses in it, one of them being that the the way cases are presented can be pretty much influenced by the way the district attorney feels about a particular case. He can, if he so chooses, to emphasize in one direction or another, and the grand jurors really aren't in a position to sort this out too well unless it's very obvious, which at times it was quite obvious. Ted Stevens, incidentally, was the district attorney at the time. I recall one case. He was in the CAP himself, and there was a case of a bank employee that was pressured into being the treasurer for the CAP. And he embezzled something like $4,000, as I recall. But he also replaced the money. As a matter of fact, if I remember right, he borrowed the money from the man that was to become the foreman of the grand jury. But anyway, the money was replaced. Essentially, he borrowed it, and then he replaced it. But Ted Stevens really wanted to hang that guy. And my own particular feelings were that he was hornswoggled into the position to begin with, and what he did was something that many business people do. He borrowed from the till and then he replaced it, and I didn't really feel it was all that bad. And I don't recall, but Stevens really wanted to nail that guy. I don't remember now whether or not a true bill was brought in, but as I recall, it wasn't. On another occasion, where there was a case of a man that had embezzled insurance premium payments that customers brought in to a partnership insurance agency. The one partner attempted to get a bill brought against his partner, and Stevens was very obviously not interested in prosecuting the situation. So this is one weakness of the grand jury system.
Excuse me.
Is that much of what is presented, or much of the way the material is presented, depends upon the prosecuting attorney, because for the most part, the grand juror doesn't have any background information on the individual cases, unless he just happens to have some. But I can see that this is a weak point, and it depends. Much of it depends upon the integrity of the prosecuting or the district attorney, not the prosecuting attorney. But by and large, I think it's a good system. It's there are enough people in the grand jury, as I recall, there were 24 there, and we could drop down, people could be excused, but I think there have to be 18 of us present to consider cases, so that, and it was a broad spectrum of the community, so I think pretty largely it was effective and fair. We met, I don't remember how often the grand jury met, but it was often enough so that people weren't held for long periods if they were being charged.
How was it that you got to serve on this grand jury?
To the best of my knowledge, it's just drawing lots out of the tax roll, just like the petty jury.
So any taxpayer then could be drawn?
I said the tax roll. It may have been the voter's registration letter, not... Yeah, the voter's registration list.
So anyone that registered to vote then might be called to be on a jury.
Right.
So this was the same year that you got, that you and Gladys bought this property.
Right.
So what else took place that year, and when did you finally decide to move to
Hospins? Well, we had shipped stuff down here that fall on the barge, and, or did we?
Yeah.
Was it the following spring? We had to. But we had some stuff down here. And I was down here off and on through the winter. And then as soon as school was out, Gladys and the kids came down.
What did Miami itself look like? And what did the Hot Springs homestead look like at that time, as far as you know?
Yeah, it actually didn't look all that different. This building, of course, wasn't here at the time. There was a 5-room log cabin at the bottom of the hill near the old building that's down there now. And then there was another small building across from where the bath is, which was used as a barn. But I would gather that that was the original homestead building, because there was wallpaper in there, that so it had obviously been lived in. In fact, there were layers of wallpaper. It had been lived in a good length of time. And I would guess that the 5-room cabin was built a little later. And there were no greenhouses at the time that were functioning. There was one small greenhouse attached to the old cabin, but most of the glass was broken out of it. There was a bath that was essentially the same size as the building and bath that exists now. And around town, many of the cabins that were there then are still standing today. And there are a few more cabins today than there were. There are probably twice as many cabins here now as then. The makeup of the community, though, was quite different in that most of the people here were bachelors or people without children. When there were only 3 small children here when we moved down, the 2 Lanning kids and the people that ran the NC store had a daughter. I think she was 13. Nancy Kress was her name. Very attractive girl that had been adopted by them. And then after the flood of 56, when the NC closed, they left. Gus Benson was the commissioner at the time and also the postmaster. Lloyd and Gene Hubbard had the roadhouse. She developed cancer in 1956 and died in 1957. Frank Jones had the flying service at the time, although he did not have the airmail contract. Ween had bought that from Bob Byers. The Clements moved here in 1956, also just after the flood, and they built that little cabin that Gertlers have. And then some years later, they built a large cabin on their property. Strandbergs had bought an acre from Byers before we bought the place. Otherwise, the original homestead was intact. Stanley Dale was living here, and Bob Kemp was working for the Bureau of Mines, and those are the only people that are year-round residents that were here then. Of course, the Pringles were here, and the Bensons and the Lannings, Pete Johnson, an old miner, was here too. That's another thing. Most of the people that were here at the time, the 20 or so, were miners or had been miners. Most of them were older people.
What seemed to be their reaction to new people in the hot springs?
I don't recall anything particularly enthusiastic or negative either way. It was very matter-of-factly accepted. The springs had changed hands three times in recent years. Browning had sold to a man named Bill Richards, but he couldn't meet the payments, and so the property reverted to Browning, and then Browning sold to Bob Byers, who in turn sold to us. And if there was any concern or enthusiasm, we were not aware of it. Or as I recall, at this date, I can't recall that there was anything.
So when you first moved here, or when you first bought the property, were you sure you had done the right thing, or did you have doubts?
Oh, absolutely. We had no doubts whatsoever, and never have had a moment's doubt. We knew that it was a unique natural resource, and have always felt very lucky to have been able to get them. There has never been a moment when I've felt any remorse, and I'm sure Gladys feels the same way. Yeah.
But, well, when you moved here, did you find, were people, did they help each other a lot? What kind of community spirit did you?
Yeah, I think that Manly Hot Springs in our knowledge of it, there's always been a pretty easygoing relationship among the people. There have been times when there have been minor frictions, but to the best of my knowledge, there are no long-standing bitter feuds that you hear about in these small Alaskan communities. Like I say, there have been times when people get irritated with one another and express it, but it blows over, and people all get together and do very well, I think.
What sort of things do people do with each other? I mean, how is this, you know, how do people get together and do things together?
Oh, well, different fellows cut wood together. They'll help one another out on mechanical problems, or if there's a matter of some cabin building, sometimes there's a little help back and forth. I don't mean to imply that everybody in the community gets together and helps a guy out this way, but different people do back and forth. And when there's an illness, a catastrophic illness, people do come together with financial support. And yeah, I would say by and large, people are concerned about the welfare of their neighbors.
That seems too good. Compared to a lot of villages, but Manly has an awful lot of resources as far as equipment people have and just skills. And, well, I guess most places people are very skillful in many things. Has this always been the case since you've been here?
Yeah, I would say generally that's true. I think it's probably true of most outlying communities that people that live out have to have skills or develop skills to enable them to live in a small place to where the services that are ordinarily available in a city just aren't available in a small town, and people just put things together on their own, or either that or they have to hire somebody to come in to do it.
Well, for instance, I noticed a lot of people have cats and kind of heavy equipment. Was there ever any, say, state or some kind of government equipment here to, you know, take care of roads and runways and things like that? Or is it always individuals?
No, there's, in our time anyway, there's always been this highway department organization. When we first came here, it was under the federal government, the old Alaska Road Commission, and then it was taken over by the Bureau of Public Roads, and then following statehood, there was a state highway department. And some of the equipment here is surplus from that, but also there's quite a bit of equipment that's miners have bought and brought in here, and then there are a few others that have brought in pieces of equipment too. That weren't associated with either the road or the mining. Of course, there are quite a few aircraft here. I think at present there are 13 residents that are pilot owners. So they're for the small town, there are quite a few, or the high per capita pilot owner.
How many residents are there right now?
There are about 60 right at the moment. Year-round residents. Mm-hmm. It fluctuates some. Last year there were 75. This year there are a few fewer. And with you guys leaving, there'll be a couple less.
You mentioned a couple of times the person called a commissioner. Commissioner of what? What did they do?
The commissioner was the United States commissioner, and there was quite a bit of jurisdiction that he had. He was responsible for recording, and he was also responsible for swearing in people to be deputized in case there was a crime committed in the area. He was also the welfare agent. He had all the powers that a U.S. commissioner would have. He was also a trial judge in certain cases. They were generally minor infractions of the law, such as game violations and so on.
So the commissioner in Manly, what area did...
It was for the Hot Springs Recording District. Incidentally, Manly, as a generic term for the town, is not very precise. Until 1958, I believe, or maybe it was 1957, the official name here was just Hot Springs, and that's what was on the, it was the post office, Hot Springs, and then the name was changed to Manly Hot Springs. And more recently, people have talked in their speech, they've dropped the Hot Springs and speak of Manly, but that's not really accurate. It's Manly Hot Springs as a town, but I noticed even on the highway department shop sign, it's listed as Manly, Alaska, which is...
Doesn't that bother you?
Yeah, it does to a degree. I like the identification of Manly Hot Springs rather than Manly. It bothered Pete Johnson something. He exploded when he learned that the name was to be changed to Manly Hot Springs. Name for that horse thief? He says.
How did they choose that name, Manly Hot Springs?
I don't know. I really don't know. I would guess, though, that Manly appropriated that name for himself when he bought in here and built the hotel, and he was quite a promoter.
So somewhere it was called Manly Hot Springs all the time, since 1910 or something?
Yes. Earlier, it was first called Baker Hot Springs, and it's been called officially Hot Springs and Manly Hot Springs. I don't know if it was ever officially Baker Hot Springs, but on the old maps and in the old USGS publications, that's what it's listed as.
Yeah, we met,
Edgar
County Sheriff Collins, to carry mail here sometimes, and he refers to it as Hot Springs always when he talks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can answer if you call it then.
Why did they have to make that name change?
Well, that was engineered by the commissioner and postmaster, in his capacity as postmaster, I guess he felt there would be less missent mail if it were identified as Manly Hot Springs instead of just Hot Springs, because mail sometimes, and in fact still, is sent to Hot Springs, Arkansas. I not infrequently get mail that's been missent to Hot Springs, Arkansas, but it's mostly promotional literature from outside. That it's not, it's unusual for a first class letter to go that route. Do you guys ever get letter or any mail missent to Hot Springs, Arkansas?
No, but I was identified myself as coming from Hot Springs, Arkansas. Oh. On television last February.
Is that right?
Strange.
Okay.